Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Hey, you know, obviously we want your phone calls today. Also want to give our email address, dave@petsofinancial.net. All right, you know, it's a rough week, right? It started off tough, markets going down. We finally have an outside event that can affect the market enough to actually have a week of losses, right? I mean, we have just been going up, 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 up. Can this continue? You know, the constant people trying to guess the top happens every time. And I'm sure there's lots and lots of people out there that feel, for example, that they called it, right? It just feels like, I gotta stop or go to the sidelines, these kind of things, let this thing play out. And here's the reality of it. That's the same feeling we have all the time, right? It's just, you know, we're feeling like we should have got out last year at some point in time or six different times, right? And we just don't. And so, you know, in the second hour today, I want to talk about some fundamental things to maybe think about. And as we're going through a pretty noisy time, impeachment, a virus that we're not sure, is the economy slowing down because of the virus? And the answer is, probably it'll slow down a little bit overseas. Not sure how much in the U.S. Don't think we're going to be affected very much from that. Clearly, China is, and clearly they are a big global force economically. So we do have to recognize that. But interestingly, and I talked about this, of course, last week, we have to recognize that what we are afraid of is the unknown, and the virus that we have is unknown. What we know, we don't seem to be afraid of, even if it's much, much worse, because we're used to it. So it's totally okay when somewhere between 6,000 and 60,000 people a year die of the flu in the United States alone. I'm not saying people are like, oh yeah, that's totally okay, I really don't care about people. I get that, but nobody's talking about that like it's going to slow down the economy and going to be a disaster. But literally, in a country that has a billion people plus the size of the population of the entire United States, that 10,000 people getting sick, frankly, not very many dying, is a freakout. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't do things about it. We shouldn't find a cure, and you know, and through this whole process, we'll become even better at medicine. I think really it'll be better. And I don't want to diminish the loss of human life. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying we need to put it in the right perspective. So, do I understand the market going down, say 600 points on Friday, as we head into the weekend, and try to figure out if A, the impeachment trial is finally done? And B, probably way more important than the impeachment trial, which nobody's watching, nobody cares, and we already know the outcome, right? Is how much more the virus might spread. How much more it might restrict travel. So I'm here in Seattle, see my grandchild, and enjoy a little birthday party. And I have to say, it was very interesting walking through the airport and seeing masks. And I don't have any, you know, it's not that they're that striking, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, you've never seen one. Of course you see them. You see them sometimes right on your flight, somebody that's susceptible to illness, maybe is being treated for, who knows, cancer, right? And so their immune system is way down. You see it occasionally, but you see more. And then you wonder about that. And I really tried to think about it as I was walking through, not you're counting them, one, two, three, but just think about it and realize that although they stand out and although people are wearing them more, the reality is there was a very tiny percentage of people. So as far as people staying at home in the United States really worried about this virus coming from, it would take a lot more outbreak in my mind within the United States to say people aren't going to go to restaurants, people aren't going to spend money, and so on. The slowdown in China, to me, makes sense because they don't have their arms wrapped around it. They're trying to, a little late, as always with communist nations. They don't care about lives. They only care about the looking correct for the constituents. So we have a whole different outlook there. So as we look at this, nobody knows what the virus is going to do. Maybe this weekend, it's like, you know, that was kind of the peak and we're done. Maybe it takes another month. I don't know. But it clearly isn't, you know, the plague, right? It's not going to wipe out 25% of the world's population. It is an economic slowdown, not an economic finish. But in a world where everything is hyper-reported, once again, it just doesn't feel like you're sitting back watching Walter Cronkite report on some virus someplace far, far away. You know, kind of in a calm, hey, this just happened and want to let you know kind of way. But in the relative scope of things, it is not the end of mankind. It doesn't feel like that. Everything is just coming at us like a fire hose of data every day, commentators commenting on it. And it does feel a little more like, I wonder what we ought to be doing. And when you say nothing, it just kind of falls on deaf ears. Really, there's nothing to do. You know, the great corporations of the world will keep going. Some of their sales in China or some of the things they buy from China may be delayed or slowed down. There might be some disruptions. That's all worthy of discussion, but not worthy of reaction. We feel sometimes to be compelled to overreact to, well, everything, right? I mean, I'm here, you know, again with my granddaughter, and, you know, it's like, well, you know, what should we do about this and this and this? They're not asking me. They're just saying we're going through these deliberation of what school to go to. And, yeah, it's not like, well, I don't care. Of course I care. But is it a defining moment in a child's life when they're turning five and heading off to kindergarten that we have got to nail the precise trajectory of her life? What school, what this and this, and that's not it. Parents should do that. But it is interesting as we try to look at all these things, how critically focused they are. And I was too. Do we send this school, you know, are we in the right school area? You know, and we try to do everything we possibly can in a world that's frankly well beyond our control. It's certainly not meant to diminish those discussions, but how intense they are. And they are. As if we can predict with any reasonable certainty what's going to happen. It feels that way if we could just get more information. And so once again, I really want to talk about this in the second hour today. About some of the basics, some of the simple things. We need to start keeping our investment ideas simple. Keep it simple, the KISS principle. We're going to talk about that because in a world that demands so much data and more is coming, right? We talk about it. We talk about it all the time. You got to get in front of 5G. You got to get in front of robotics, artificial intelligence, and genetics. But our world is changing so fast that we can't possibly fathom what all of these different things are going to mean. It's worthy of discussion, but it's not worthy of us defining our investments by the daily flow of news. Not at all. In fact, as we look back at all of the things over the past, you know, I'll just call it 10 years, because the flow of data has just been exponential, right? I mean, it's just more and more and more. So it's not like we can compare, well, this looks a lot like 1967. No, it doesn't look at all like 1967. There's nothing about it that looks like 1967. The communications, the data, the availability of everything is way different. It's way different. So we do need to examine it like in the more recent time. Not that that gives us conclusions. We don't say and dismiss history. It's very important to go back and know that the best market year was, you know, in the early 1930s. It was over 50%. Why? Because it bounced off the bottom. Why is that important? Because that's what it always does. the best years follow the worst years, like always. But, and the market goes up by astronomical amounts over a long period of time, but we look at these data flows and we overreact all of the time. And over the last 10 years, that overreaction is amped up because of the flow of data. I don't want to say information because it's just data. Well, this happened, that happened, blah, 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 blah. Without a proper context, it's not even information, let alone knowledge, let alone wisdom. It's not even on the same planet. It's just noise. And we don't know what to do with it. And so, anyway, I'm going to talk about that in a second. But right now, I do have to take a quick break. And our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. All right, let's go ahead and jump on the phones. I guess we've got a call here from Jim. Jim, hey, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave. How's it going?
Excellent, excellent. It's always fun to hang around a five-year-old birthday party, and that's happening here later today. So I enjoyed my grandkids very much. So, and I appreciate all of you, by the way, for putting up with me being on the road. I know it sounds a little different, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
I try to remember my five-year-old birthday, but maybe. I wanted you to, you know, you say over the long term, stocks go up like 10% a year. And right. I wondered if you could tell me exactly how that's determined. And before you do, I want to tell you the figures that I've come up with. Now, I've got like 100 stocks and nearly $500,000 in cost basis. And what I've determined is that compounded cumulative, I'm about like 8.3%. Like you take, you know, like the cost basis times your, at the end of that year, it's up 8.3%. And the next year, based on the previous balance, up 8. So overall, of the length of the time that I've owned them, like 8.3%. Now, the other way is that you take the total appreciation divided by the cost basis, and it's they're up about 15.1% per annum. So anyway, that's how I determine mine.
You know, it's the way that it's determined is the mathematical, you know, if you will, the internal rate of return, compounded rate of return, and that includes dividends, and it includes the dividend reinvestment date. Okay, so
right.
That's
you
very
know,
difficult.
I don't take into consideration dividends. So,
well, that's Jim, that's crazy. Since
I'd probably be upright with a 10% then.
Yeah, you just want to add in your 2 to 3%. Depends on what stocks you're owning. But the overall S&P 500, even including some of the stocks like Google that don't pay dividends, which are up much more than 10, as we well know, right?
Right.
But the point there is that over the last, 50 or 60 years, over half of the return has occurred from dividends. And that's what people miss is the idea that a Procter & Gamble from in 1970 paying 1 cent per share and today paying 70 cents per share has more income and a higher income increase than, frankly, anything on the planet. It's just quite astounding when we think about it. But anyway, you don't want to ignore that overall because it's that compounding of the dividends and the raising of the dividends. So when we say the dividend return is only a couple percent, that's true by today's dollar amount. But if you go back to when the Dow was, let's say, one-fifth of where it was, right?
Right.
Then that says it's a 10% dividend yield based on that. And of course, we go back further when the Dow, I started in the industry and the Dow was at 800, we're at 28,000. So what is the relative yield on the Dow today? You can see what I'm getting at.
Right.
And that's true of the S&P, not just the Dow. So the answer really is it's a mathematical, it's a very good question because we run into this literally all the time where people misunderstand cost basis versus rate of return. Because your cost basis reflects the fact that your dividends are being reinvested, and that is raising your cost basis because you pay taxes on it. But that doesn't—that's not part of your investment. Your investment is $100 you put in, not the other 100 over the years that you got in dividends. Right? It's your cost basis or your investment basis is what you put in, the taxable basis.
One thing that bugs the hell out of me, like I've got Edward Jones, right? Well, on their statement, they always give the estimated dividend, the estimated. Well, on foreign stocks, they do not take into consideration the 15% tax, which is asinine because you're not getting 15%. But I tell them about that, but they don't do anything about it.
Well, you have to be careful with that, too, because before it comes to you, number one, there's two things. You're going to get foreign tax credit on your tax return, right? You see that in your 1099. That's number one. Number two, you do also oftentimes additionally have costs for holding that stock, okay?
Right.
It's called an ADR fee, and you'll see that occasionally. Not in this case, the company you're holding it with, your custody firm, may waive it. They may just eat that. I don't know. But the point is there you want to calculate all of that in there. But at the same time, you do want to net out that the foreign tax credit that you get, and you also are going to have to recognize when they say it's going to earn X percent, you're right. You are paying taxes, whether here or over there. And in foreign countries, that tax rate is much, much higher. But by the time the dividend gets to you and it's taxed to you, that company has already paid its tax. So anyway, I think it's more difficult to do than most people think. It's simplistic on a short-term basis. It's very difficult on a long-term basis to compound out for decades, say, a quarterly dividend on a package of 50 stocks. You don't want to deal with that. If you're trying to do it simplistically, you know, for example, whether it's 8% or 10%, you've done very well, better than anything else. That's pretty good. But it is good to be able to measure.
And not only that, I buy the stocks I want. I've got some real dogs there. So you throw those in and, you know, I'm doing, you know, very well.
Yeah. All right. Jim, I'm sorry.
Take
we're
care.
Out of time this hour. Have a
Have
great
fun.
Day. We'll talk to you next hour, everybody. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hey, our number, of course, is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. And I do, of course, want to hear your questions and feed them to us either way. I do want to say this, of course, as we do every week, that these are my opinions only. If we happen to mention a stock, I casually mentioned Google. Yeah, I mean, these are casual mentions. We're not here to buy and sell. That is ridiculous. I don't know what your objectives are. And as we talk about it, for example, let's say you're in retirement or nearing it. Your objective now is income for life off of your pile of money, right? A rather tricky thing to do. It's not all that tricky, but you have to really be, if you will, more careful of market movements, okay, and setting aside reservoirs, things like that, that we talk about all the time. And it is very easy to overreact in those circumstances, but the only objective is to have your money outlive you. Not, you know, I'm not sure if I'm keeping up with the market. You won't when it goes up a lot. It'll be, you know, like last year was 30%, maybe you got 24 in a diversified portfolio. And now the market's down, but some of the stuff you have is not. And the market's not down. I mean, it's not even off 1%, right? It's just, we just erased the gains for the year. Bummer. Certain occur over and over all the days of our lives type of thing. But the point is, we need to be thinking about what our objective is, not what's hot, what's not. You know, it's like people a couple of years ago, right? It's like, should we be buying pot stocks? No. Most of those companies are still run by criminals, basically, and it's a while. There's no banking laws. But everybody's going to be smoking pot. Okay, I got it. Okay, all right. It's becoming legal in lots of places, and that's going to mean consumption is going to go up. Who's going to be the one making the weed? Making the money. We don't know. Anyway, it's just kind of one of those really recent examples of people chasing nonsense. And yeah, they ran up because people were chasing nonsense. And they all collapsed. Right? No pun intended, in a heap of ashes. Many of them are going to go away. But they all collapsed. We don't want to chase around and chase ourselves, but what I want to talk about this hour is I want to talk about the simplicity that we want to try to get to, especially with all of the noise of the world, not just now, not today, not because of the coronavirus, or Brexit or impeachment or what the Dems want to do or the socialists want to do, blah, blah, blah. Noise. Noise. If you want to get it, filter it down to the most simplistic, and I will, and then I'm going to back into some, quotes, data, if you will, which I know it kind of, you know, yeah, but sorry, it'll be minimal data. Don't worry. But I also think with data sometimes, at least for the way my brain works, if I can grasp the big picture and then put the data points as an, if you will, an apostrophe on the end, it helps me to appreciate the fact-based opinion, if you will, right? That this is going to be okay, and here's the data, and here's the facts to back that up. So I always like to not just say, hey, it's going to be okay, thanks for tuning in. It's going to be okay because, boom, 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 right? Or this is the way we want to be thinking about our investments because, boom, boom, boom. So let's go to the very basics of this. It is going to be okay. The world is growing. And that's what you need to understand overall. And now if we want to go ahead and pull it back to today, isn't that what we're worried about this week? We're worried about the fact that the growth is slowing down. Europe is barely growing, and then you take away China, that could become a humongous problem. And then we throw Brexit into the mix. Oh, my gosh, they just walked away yesterday. What's going on? And China, which is a huge driver to the future growth of the economy, and what about the emerging markets? And they're all just going to tank, and there's no growth. Got it. Overall, there's growth. What we're talking about is today's noise overreaching and impacting the overall thought that things continue to grow. Maybe not this coming year, maybe not the next couple of years, but do you really think 5G, AI, robotics, a lot of it's scary, don't get me wrong, very scary, right? Genetics. All of the advances, and of course we're only touching on it, fintech, which is going to allow small places, if you will, Africa, to join the 20th century. And yes, I know, 21st century. I got it. But they're not even in the 20th century, right? My point is, we miss it when we focus on the minutia and the noise of today. We miss the simplicity. Of the fact that the world is growing, continues to grow, both in the populations of the world, the GDPs of the world, the wealth of the world, the average person. We get caught up in the minutia. People in the United States live better than they ever have. But we have a homeless problem, and we do. And I don't need to dive into, this is something that totally breaks my heart. It's something that is one of the most important things in my life that I want to see change. Don't know why. I do know why. It's because of my childhood. Growing up in a, you know, not growing up in a very poor area, but seeing it, watching my grandparents minister to it. But it is very close to me, so don't misunderstand what I'm saying. These are painful, even emotional things to me, but we have to see it in the big picture. So I don't have to stop and give a, you know, hey, I really am a human being. I'm not a robot speech every time I say it. The point is that we're talking about a virus right now, and we miss the point that this is a country the size of the United States plus 1 billion people. And we're worried about 10,000 cases. You've got to be kidding me. I don't even know what that digital digit looks like, but it's pretty small, and it's not deadly. But we do have to contain it, and so we have a temporary slowdown. Does that mean the world is done? That would be quite a bet in my mind, quite a bet to make. If you really want to try to be a Pollyanna, you could also say, good, this takes China out a little bit more. Their power is being diminished. Donald Trump has really put them on the rails and their economy. with tariffs, and they want to make deals, and they were going to quit stealing technology, at least for, you know, a minute. It's made a difference, a huge difference. To me, these are the big picture things. Jim, in the last hour, good call, Jim. Thank you. And I think it's a fabulous question. How do you actually know how much the market went up? Well, it's 10%. And we've all come to kind of accept that. But how do you actually measure that and so on and so forth? We sometimes forget the simplicity of the fact that half of the returns over the last 50, 60 years come from dividends. Dividends that are paid, whether the companies are, you know, dealing with a SARS virus, they're dealing with the Fed, oh my gosh, raising interest rates too much, you know, like six times in 1993, oh my gosh, the market correct. We deal with market crashes, flash crashes. I don't know how we're going to survive QE 1, 2, 3, and 4. And when they start taking the money away, we're all done. And the hyperinflation that's going to cause. Yeah, it just goes, the list goes on and on and on about how we're going to die and why. Because human beings, by nature, are easily swayed at what's wrong, not what's right. We can't see long term. We see only what's right in front of us. That shiny object right there is so compelling to us, information-wise, life-wise, every-wise. Why do people spend themselves into debt? I mean, from biblical times, we know that's wrong and stupid behavior and doesn't lead to anything right. Nothing. So that you can party a little harder right now and have to deal with this later and you can't start your own business. We all know the whole story, right? It's human beings, shiny object. And yes, some of you listening, probably most of you, have a gene inside of you, right? Because you wouldn't be listening otherwise. Because that message isn't to people that are in debt. They don't want to hear it, right? You don't want to hear it. A guy that needs to lose a few pounds, he doesn't want to listen to a diet program. He doesn't want to. He's not ready to. Not ready to. But the point is that we have a shiny object in front of us, and we all have our own shiny objects. But you maybe have that gene of, if you will, like Munger talked about, that he Buffett have. And that's the deferred gratification gene. Maybe you have that. And it all boils down to, obviously, contentment. It all boils down to that. And it is very difficult for us to be content as human beings. It's a very serious problem. It's not how we're wired. And we all put it in a financial way only. So I got this nailed down. I don't have it. It flows out. So what we want to try to do is look at it simplistically. What is going on in the world? Can I somehow crawl above the noise? Let's just take the last 12 years or so, the invention of the iPhone. Everything else is noise. If we just focus on what that's created all by itself, a computer in your pocket, a GPS, information that is more vast than the Library of Congress, and you only ask it a question, and it tells you. You don't even have to go and read the whole book. It's remarkable, unbelievable, and is propelling even more amazing things. And that's just one company with one invention, and now the others are chasing it. I get it. Well, what about Samsung? I got it, okay? It's not just Apple. The point is one thing, and all the chips that go in it, and all the things that it allows people to do, and all the technologies that spin off. Now you've got billionaires racing to space. This is unbelievable. Not your tax dollars going into some bureaucracy, shooting for the moon 10, 15, 20 years from now. A bunch of people just spending their own money. And yeah, they launch some satellites, and that helps out everybody. So they get paid for it, then keep driving into space. And all that technology keeps piling up and affecting everything else. Our standard of living globally is improving all of the time, to the point that literally There are so few people compared to just a few years ago, 10, 12 years ago, 20 years ago, when millions of people every year in sub-Sahara Africa starved to death. Oh, yeah, yawn. Oh, that's another problem solved. And we do that. We don't recognize how far we're coming and see the big picture. We see the shiny object in front of us, and almost always, it's so easy too. Instead of that shiny object we turn to, is fear. Ah, look at all these problems. It's what we do. It's so much, it's so easy, and it's so easy. The equity indexed annuity pimps, that's what they do, right? They don't talk about 10% returns in the market. They talk about Wall Street casinos and things. They don't talk about the income from the market. You just sit back and enjoy it. They don't talk about that. It's fear. Because nobody would buy them otherwise. People go into gold for fear. The shiny object of fear. And you can't sell anything, apparently, on a newscast without fear. I mean, it's just, you think about these bulletins, right? So the impeachment trial is about to end. And then there'll be a huge comma but and how it's going to take out this and take out that. The Democrats aren't done. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. And it'll sink the economy in some way, shape, or form. And you might say, well, that's because the media is liberal. It is. It also sells fear. Always. In all ways. Because people won't. And they won't watch. If there's not a train wreck, they just won't. Because the shiny object is right there and they want to see it. So when we think about things, and you think about your life, and I know everybody's life was greater when you were 12 years old. I get that. That's human nature too. Or when you were 35 or 50 years old or 40 or whatever it is, you know, when you were like at your prime physically. You were awesome, you were amazing, and you're not so much anymore. But the reality is life was a lot tougher. Every generation and every decade literally gets easier. More stuff, not just stuff sitting in our garage, stuff that makes our life easier, gives us more time. It's up to us with that stuff, what we do with our time, right? And what we do with our stuff. It can be positive, it can be negative. But when we don't see the world clearly for the big picture, that a cup of coffee a day for 40 years is $1.24 million, you don't have to worry about ups and downs in the market. They'll happen. But that's what the S&P 500 did, 10% growth for 40 years on $5 a day. That's the world we live in. That everybody can be rich. Not everybody, or what about this group of people, that group of people. I'm in Seattle. It's a homeless cesspool here. It's a problem. In the midst of such wealth and innovation. But that's not taking us out. I'm saying the overall economy, if we take the big picture, that's what we've got. And we've had it as we measure the market since 1926. World wars, all of the nonsense. Stupid big things. Stupid politicians. We roll. Companies recreate themselves. Creative destruction is amazing. Countries rise and fall. But what the shiny object is every day is some kind of virus or some kind of what the Fed's going to do. It's crazy what we fuss about. What do you think about? Is the market to this or that? Let me see. All right. So we're just getting started on kinetics, AI, robotics, 5G. And there's billionaires figuring out how to go to space. Not even with our money. Everything's digitalized. You've come up with a good idea, you're a billionaire. Boom. You don't need billions in capital. Unbelievable opportunities. That's the big picture. everywhere. And of course we have problems because we have human beings to deal with. You and I, we're the problem, right? I get it. Simplistic. Put money away monthly. We'll talk more, but I want to hear from you at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Our number again is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, it is so easy to bang the negative drum. It's really the lazy way. It really is. It's so easy to do it. I mean, it's not a problem. In the old days, I mean, I know, I can't believe I've been doing this for like way over 30 years now. But in the old days, you know, I used to kind of do this little back and forth. Like I would come on and do a real negative kind of a, you know, here's all the problems in the world. It's just, there's no way things can work. Just why? Because just making fun of the, in that day, it was mostly the gold bugs, right? They were the fear mongers of the world. I mean, it's just unbelievable how much, yeah, I guess they're just sending out their newsletters of doom and gloom to get people to buy gold. Nowadays, it's the equity indexed annuity pimps. Come to our dinner seminar and we'll teach you, you know, we'll tie up your money, take huge commissions, and make sure you really don't keep up with inflation at all. You make no money, but it's guaranteed. And I just, it's frustrating, of course. And I know people think that we're, I had this comment the other day, and I promised, I'm sorry, I just didn't even get to it because I don't think about it. And that is this. You know, people think you're a competitor. Like, of what? You know, like the equity index annuity pimps. Well, not at all. We're not a competitor of that at all. In fact, we don't have any competition. There is no competition. I mean, when people may check us out and go to another advisory firm or vice versa, certainly win our fair share. But we don't have equity index annuities that we would sell. We can do it. I'm licensed to do it. But there's no competition because it's a horrible product. I have to actually live with myself. I guess other people have genes of, you know, deception that don't bother them. Mine does. And so I can't sell a horrible product. So it's not a competition. I think that's an important point. And I'm sorry I haven't mentioned that before, but it's not like I can't do that. We can do anything. Just choose to work in a fiduciary relationship with our clients. What that means is we have to do what's right for the client, period. And but yeah, we can still sell insurance and do those kinds of things, and that takes you out of a fiduciary relationship, as nutty as that sounds. So no, it's not a competitive thing at all. Not at all. And I don't know how else to express it, because it just doesn't, it isn't. I appreciate the comment and allowing me to clarify it. It's it also leads me for one final thing before we take a break here for Fox News. And that is, if people need, and some people do, I get it, low risk or even no risk, they need guarantees. There are guarantees that do give you participation in the market. And it's clearly defined. You clearly know what participation you get. It's not a liar product. And there is no cost. There's no commission to do it. And they're sold by the, gosh, there's like billions and billions and billions of dollars that are transacted every month in them. And they're called structured notes. You know, the whole, if you will, derivatives market, and I know that's a big word for really saying one guy's taking the risk off the table and so on. So all the bankers now are competing very heavily, and costs have dropped to next to nothing. And I mean, way below 1%. And they're not commissioned products anymore. And if people need guarantees, they're out there. They're just called structured notes, and they're done by the JP Morgans of the world, the banks of the world, if you will. And they even have FDIC insurance if somebody needs that. I don't know why you need it, right? I don't want people to do that. That's not what I'm saying. I think some of the structured notes are wonderful. But literally, they have many of them out there that are 100% guaranteed. You can't lose. For every can't lose, you give up some of the upside participation, but it's not a liar product. Right there. And by the way, you can get out of them. So it is, those are the things that are out there, and I just wanted to address that. So thank you again for holding me accountable to explain it. I do appreciate it. And there isn't just competition. That's absurd. This is not, we don't compete against people that don't have licenses, aren't certified financial planners, don't have a fiduciary relationship. That's not competition. That's just people that are scaring people, because people wouldn't do this with any knowledge at all. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. We've got 30 minutes left in today's program. Now, come on, let's get on those phones. Let's talk about what you want to talk about, what questions you have. And we'll be right back after Fox News. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And I would love to hear from you, seriously. 580-KIDO is our number. If you prefer email, that's fine. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. So we've been covering, if you will, some of the simplistic and trying to see the big picture past the shiny object. And it is really tough to do. Yeah, because we are compelled by the current. And probably anthropologists will tell us that's all that matters, because our brain is wired that way. To worry about, you know, saber-toothed tigers, whatever. You know what I'm saying? These are things that we are wired for, flight or fight. And I get that. But there's so much information, and we don't live in a world like that, that we ought to be able to stop and think just a little bit. Just think. Contemplate. Slow down. Don't be driven by the shiny object. Think about what's happening in a bigger picture. You know, it is interesting when I hear things. I mean, I just kind of, sometimes you shake your head, like, if you were like talking to your doctor, but you choose to believe a non-licensed person about some herb you're going to take, instead of the oncologist that tells you this is the pathway for treatment. Why don't we at least have a discussion here? Why would we believe that the whole world is out, you know, if you will, to get me, instead of to help you? Well, when we turn that and think about that, and how sad it is that some people will do that, right? It's, you know, take some very, very, very strong herbs or something instead of pharmaceuticals, and use that as treatment with no testing, no knowledge, right? And we think that's sad. But when it comes to finances, it's sad too, to think that people are going to be like hanging with their buddies. Well, here's what I'm doing. Oh, okay. I don't know why I would care from, you know, a non-professional, or here's what I'm worried about. Here's the frightening thing. I've been listening a lot to, you know, like MSNBC. And here's what's really going on out there with the economy. Why would you get your economic news from political bias? You see what I'm saying? It's not helpful when our sources are so warped, or when we're trying to grasp at things that you can't grasp, when the simplicity of it is we don't know what the future is. And you either think about it from a standpoint of, if you will, again, being simple, the cup is half full or it's half empty. The world is growing. It's full of abundance or it's finite. I mean, number one, the world obviously isn't finite. It couldn't be, because when we said if the world had a billion people, we would all starve. We went to two, we go to eight, now we're at eight, right? And nobody's starving, certainly relatively speaking, but I know there's some child in Chicago, so I can hear it, okay? I know, I'm an insensitive buffoon. Relatively, we throw away food. We have never had a higher standard of living, ever, in the entire world. Literally, hundreds of millions of people are entering into the middle class. Where, if we're talking about Maslow's hierarchy, or we're talking about finance and all the, if you will, washing machines are going to buy. But the fact of the matter is when you're not just having to take care of the shiny object in front of you and eat, your whole world becomes more abundant. We think it's just absurd. Everything is so dangerous, right? No, it's not. It's less dangerous than it's ever been everywhere. It just doesn't feel like that when you sit down and watch the news all the time. Is the world finite? Or is it abundant? We're going to run out of oil. Well, somehow we didn't. Weird. But we didn't. The world was going to be orange like 20 years ago. That's what I was taught when I was a kid. Taught. By the geniuses who decided that, whatever they decided politically, that the world was finite. Technology wouldn't allow the automobile to put millions more cars on the road and have the air clear. The world's better than it's ever been. I know, you're still going to die. But the world is abundant. We figure out stuff all the time. Well, what about we're out of energy? No, we're not. No, we're not. We clearly are not. Not yet. Not even close. Not even close. So when you hear the latest doomsday report on whatever it is that you need to hunker down, go short, hedge your bet, do whatever, try to remember to keep it simple. Try. Because they're really good at it. See yourselves. And they're professionals at it. Professionals. That's really something when you think about it. Amazing. There's an entire industry out there to scare you into buying things that are bad for you. Astounding. Why wouldn't you think they're good at it? They are. And it is very easy for us humans to be scared and not feel that the world is abundant, to feel everything is finite. If I get rich, you get poor. If I get rich, it's on the back of somebody else. Ask the politicians when you take their money away. Yeah, but I like their iPhones. I like that new app that they have. It connects me with my family. But, so we shouldn't pay people for that, even though we like the product. Oh, we need to redistribute. Okay, because that'll help. So we get caught also in this, you know, he has more than I do, so I can't be content with only, you know, a few millions of dollars. It's astounding. And with all of our shiny objects right in front of us, it is easy to scare us and miss the picture. Miss this picture that everybody can become financially independent. Everyone. And it's easy. It's so easy a caveman can do it, right? I mean, it is really, how hard is it to put $5 a day, $150 a month away for 40 years? Imagine if you just kind of bumped it by a couple percent a year as you went. That's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing. All right, I got to take a quick break. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. This is our final break, so I'm going to leave a wide open segment here, and I'd appreciate if we get some phone calls, so please do. If you prefer email, it's dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome, and thank you again for joining us. I would like to have some phone calls and maybe an email, okay? But anyway, we'll continue on. Hope that we do get those. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It is interesting how calls come and go. I mean, we can get, you know, six in a program. We can get next to none. But anyway, it is a funny deal. It really is. All right, I want to go back to the basics here and talk about this, because it's not just about putting money away on a monthly basis. It's also the simplicity and complexity of how to manage the money in your retirement as well. It isn't easy, because it can become a very emotional time when markets decline. And the pile of money, let me rephrase, when markets inevitably decline before soaring to all-time highs, everything's easy. And sometimes it's very interesting how emotional we really are. Now, most people understand that my portfolio is not, quote, the S&P 500. But it is interesting how people get concerned, if you will, not concerned, just, you know, maybe that's an over too strong a word, but wondering about the returns they have relative to, say, the market, when the market's doing great. And they have a diversified portfolio where some aspects of it aren't doing as well as, say, the S&P, and we lose sight. So when markets are going up, everybody's happy. And this is where it can become frightening on the reverse of the fear, right? And greed maybe is too strong, because, you know, when we use such strong language, if you will, then people kind of pull back and go, I'm not greedy. I just want, right? So it is too strong a word. It really is. But I want the best performance for my entire portfolio. And you don't get to have that. Because when you pull money out of an account for income on a regular basis, then fluctuations can hurt you. They can kill you. If you sell your assets down, it can kill you, financially speaking. And this is why it's so critical to have a mix, to have things, if you will, in your reservoir that aren't moving with the market. And so when we think about this in a simplistic way, we're going to draw a simple picture. But it requires all of us to take a deep breath and not overreact to fear or greed. It's all fun and games, right? Until somebody loses an eye. So we think about that when it's all fun and games, the market's going up, and yada, yada. But you know what most people do with that, instead of actually enjoying that? Maybe harvesting a few gains, setting aside, and quit worrying about it? Losing sight of the big picture? Do you think it can keep going, or should we bail? They really do spend their time thinking about bailing, which is sad. Again, trying to guess market tops, trying to guess when they should sell and then what, rebuy? No, you can't. You want to know simply how well that works? A, it doesn't. B, if you're right, you never get back in. And finally, the most important thing is you're done. you're finished. I'm not kidding. I'm not being dramatic. People won't admit they're wrong. You're done. People will keep on playing that silly game. They really do. It's really sad. So we can't play that game. We're not going to play that game. But in order to have the right perspective, we've got to have a simple thought process. What I have is a reservoir of investments, right? In that reservoir, we have snow melt in the spring, and we have rainwater all year long, represented, if you will, by the income coming in from dividends in your portfolio, maybe some interest coming in, whether it's from, you know, say, real estate holdings, real estate funds. And let's suppose if we're trying to take out 4 or 5% income, and we can freak out about the rising and falling levels of our reservoir, or we can recognize the reason of the reservoir is not the absolute value of it, but how much income is in there, right? Because that's really what the reservoir is. I'm not even talking about, if we're talking about snow melt, that is selling off assets to replenish the reservoir. And if we sell those assets down, that is a problem. They can be down a little, they can't be down a lot. So we need to leave them alone and not sell, not panic, and not worry about, because we push the button. Do you want to know what simplistic absurdity is? Pushing the button every day to know what your net worth is. Like, that helps. And it also is the defining person that you are. But in retirement, it's deadly. It's deadly. Oh, it's not deadly now because we're not in the midst of a really bad market. We're not in the 2008. We're not in the bear market at all. Which, by the way, is certain to occur. But do you think you just like someday stop pushing the button if it becomes this habit you do? I push the button every day. Why? You want to feel bad? You want to try to do something wrong? You want to become greedy or fearful? It makes no sense. It really doesn't. So don't do that. But what happens is if we're thinking of our reservoir as the value, we're wrong. The reservoir is 3 to 5 years worth of income. So that the value doesn't matter. The price doesn't matter. Excuse me. The value is what's in the reservoir. The price of the securities, the portfolio, doesn't matter. So it's comprised of 3 to 5 years, and we're sitting, wow, that's cash. That's a lot of money. He's on the sidelines earning nothing. It is. It doesn't have to look like cash. First of all, if you're trying to take out 4 or 5%, what if 2.5% of that half was just income, rainwater coming in? Well, then the reality is I need 2.5 years worth of a reservoir, and I have an equivalent of 5. And when I say 3 to 5, what's that based on? It's based on, here's the simplicity. Is the market doing good? Not defined by some formula doing good. You know if it's doing good. Hey, we were up 30% last year. Does that sound like it's good? That sounds good to me. Okay, that's good. I don't need a definition. It's good. So when the market's good, we want to prepare for the next correction. I want to move towards the 5-year mark. When the market's bad and we've been selling down some of that reservoir because I don't want to sell off my my assets at a depreciated price, we move down towards 3 years. So where are we now? We should be at 5. It's been great for a long time. But it only needs 2.5 years. And in a world of zero interest rates, it should be pretty minimal on cash. Some short-term bonds, pretty minimal, because you're not going to earn much. But you've got some things out there nowadays especially that are open to people, that have very little price movement, that don't move with the market. That's what I want. Some private real estate holdings. And I don't mean you go out and buy a building, but they're literally traded on the markets, but they're not priced like stocks every single day. There's so many opportunities out there. but not they're not convoluted, weird things you pay big commissions on. They're traded securities. Some alternatives, if you will. But alternatives that have a real return. In other words, they're throwing rainwater into our reservoir, but not moving with it. So when we think of these things as simplistic, they are. It can have complicated moving parts. But if we see it in a simple way, then maybe the price of those securities doesn't bother us as much. We can think, we can take a step back, and we can think about a Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson, even, you know, companies like Clorox, Heinz, that pay an income that just keeps going higher. When people feel like they need to buy pot stocks or the hottest IPO or some digital company they don't even know of, like WeWorks or something, then that's the picture. You don't have to get on an IPO. You could buy Apple 30 years after it started and have more than a 10-bagger. Microsoft? Google? Doesn't pay a dividend. I get it. So here's the point. If we think of the world as right in front of us, you're trying to think about your retirement, and all you do is measure your ability to have income for the next 30 years based on the price of that portfolio, you miss it. And you miss the piece that comes with understanding it's about the income picture. It's kind of important. And we can make the wrong moves. Again, if it's about price, we're thinking finite. If it's not about price, we're thinking the income flow, and we're thinking about abundance. We're thinking about the fact that the Procter & Gambles of the world are selling more and more soap and diapers everywhere because of the abundance that's hitting the middle class everywhere. Nobody buys diapers when they can't find food. When we don't think of things, if we think of things in a complex way, like what's Brexit going to do to Procter & Gamble? I would guess they're going to raise their dividend again. They've done it 70 years in a row. Yeah, but I want to know why. Does it really matter if it's 120 or it's 110? You tell me. Or does it matter that they raise their dividend by more than 3 times the rate of inflation for my lifetime? Yes, they raised it in 08 and 09. Yes, they raised it in 2000, 01, 02. They raised it in the crash of 87. They raised it in the flash crash. And I'm not telling you to go buy Procter & Gamble at all. But companies like that, that's the big picture. All right, we can complicate this, but it's not necessary. If we keep it simple, the shiny object of the fearful news, the annuity pimps, the gold pimps, they fade. They fade from our view, and we see an abundant world. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'll talk to you next week.